Toledo, we're famous for Glass, Art Tatum, Tony Pacos, Jamie Farr, a world-class museum, the Toledo Mud Hens and Walleye, an outstanding zoo and public library system. But who are the people that make our city so great? Welcome to the Soul of the Glass City podcast. I'm your host, Monique.
I'm so excited. It is such an honor to have my guest today, Dr. Marvin Whitfield. How are you feeling, sir?
Doing great, and thank you for having me today.
I'm so glad that you took time out of your ultra busy schedule, because we all know, well, if we don't know, we will know today, all that you do. So we have a lot of native Toledoans that come on this podcast, but you happen to be a transplant who has made the Glass City more than your home. So where are you originally from?
Born in New York, White Plains, New York, White Plains Hospital. But I spent a good portion in law enforcement down south in a little old quaint city on the Gulf Coast called Mobile, Alabama.
Okay. So, you know, native New Yorker, yes. Even though you're the state New Yorker and I'm the city New Yorker, it's okay. Yes. It's okay. You were a former law enforcement officer with a special set of skills. Without giving too much information, can you tell our listeners what you did and what you currently do now in your career as an entrepreneur?
Yes. So I started in law enforcement as a actually around age 12 as an explorer while I was in school, and then later started with the police department in Mobile, Alabama at 17 as a police cadet. Worked my way up through the ranks to command. Overseen narcotics investigations, intelligence, special operations, and tactics, which is everybody knows SWAT. And retired in 2009 when I was recruited by the government to design training for specialized units in the military.
Can you say that a little bit slower, that last part, just a little slower?
That's that Yankee side.
Okay.
Yeah. In 2009, I was offered an opportunity to work up under the United States Army. You call it USAIC, the United States Army Intelligence Contract, USAIC. Did that for a couple of years before I started my own business in consulting. It's my company's called Blue Force Mobile Training Team. And we specialize in training law enforcement, military, but also leadership development, workforce development, cultural competency, and workplace safety.
So it would explain, I'm not going to say where I saw them, but a whole bunch of certificates for all types of, you know, just really dope. I think I saw an FBI certificate or something.
On the federal task force for a couple of years.
Yeah. So we got a very important person up in here. So exciting. You mentioned to me before how you noticed that even with all your years of expertise and experience in your field, that you felt like others were passing you in rank and promotions. How did you combat that?
During my law enforcement career, experienced that. Like I said, I started in the late 80s, so things a little bit different, you know, especially being down south. You know, removing barriers and different challenges. But I learned throughout the years and through some of my mentors is to focus on the work and not others. And you may have to work a little bit harder to prove yourself, but once you get over that barrier, the door is open. And I was fortunate. Started at 17, retired at 39 as a commander.
Let's talk about the education piece, because that's really what I was getting at.
Okay. So I wish I can say in my law enforcement career, that's where I figured it out. But in law enforcement, it's all about training. We had a lot of internal training. And so I retired with nothing but an associate's degree, because, like I said, I started in the mid to late 80s, to where it wasn't, they started not really looking at education until like 90s, bringing it to the law enforcement community, making requirements as far as rank. So I retired with an associate's degree, but it was when I went to the private sector doing government contract that I learned that the more education, the more capabilities along with your experience, the better the pay and the better the opportunities. So in that period, I grabbed a couple of degrees.
Okay, what kind of degrees?
A master's in criminal justice, a master's in business, specialization in leadership in HR, human resource management, and then later my PhD.
It's so exciting, because you basically did it the hard way first.
Yes, got the experience first and followed the education.
Still, that's awesome. So now we get to the favorite part of who you are, like my favorite part of who you are and what you do, your philanthropic side. And I would like you to share that with us and tell the people what you do.
So I tell everybody, life is a journey. I started off in law enforcement and then transitioned to teaching others. It was in that space of doing contract with the government, doing design and training, that I decided to go back and further my education. When I got to the space of my PhD, there was a lot going on within the United States and around the world as it relates to law enforcement and people of color. I'm a person of color, but I was born and raised law enforcement. So I know either side is not bad, just misunderstood. And so I wanted to understand the why, being a trainer and a facilitator of training. And so I decided to do my research in cultural competency and implicit bias and how it impacts how we think. In that space, I had personal growth because I had to learn about psychology, I had to learn about trauma. And I realized the things I experienced, good and bad, impacted how I seen the world. And so I can tell you, you know, I was good at what I did in law enforcement. I did it by the book. I was highly decorated. But I was also looking at the community in the wrong way. To me, we was taught in how we see things, the way you clean a community up is by doing away with crime, you know, putting people into the system, or removing the bad element out of the community. We're not given the tools to understand why the community do some of the things they do. But in the space of learning about cultural competency, implicit bias, trauma, and things of that nature, I learned a lot about myself and how I viewed the community I was serving. And I realized I was policing the community instead of serving the community. Not with ill intent, but that's just the tools we was given. And so I decided then, it was in 2016, I decided to spend the second half of my life keeping people out of the system. And that's when I started getting into philanthropy, focusing on youth.
And you are currently your organization that you run.
Yeah, Big Brothers and Big Sisters.
Of Northwestern Ohio.
Yes.
And how important is that to you?
It's given me a purpose. Most people follow their passion, and very few people actually recognize and connect with their true purpose. Your passion is what drives us. Passion is what makes us feel good. But your purpose is why you exist. And when I started doing philanthropy, and we moved into this area, I joined the Toledo Rotary. And that's how I met Big Brothers and Big Sisters. And I don't charge nonprofits for my services. And so if a nonprofit reaches out and says, hey, I need support, I give them that support. And during that period, it was in maybe late 2019, they was going through a crisis. And they reached out and said, hey, we need your support. We need some leadership. Can you help us out? And so it's supposed to be a 90-day deal. And I did the assessment, and I started in late December of 2019, and put a plan together for them, but then COVID hit. They was already in financial crisis, antiquated systems. I didn't have the correct workforce, and so I extended for another 90 days. Even though I live in this area, but I live in a suburban community. And so I didn't really know a lot about Toledo because I'm in and out of the city on business a lot. And it gave me a chance to learn more and see that they had a great need. So I extended my stay. I've been almost about 5 years now. And I made an agreement with the board. Until you get financially in a space, I will stay on board and donate my salary back, plus donate through my business. But we have to run it as a business with a community mindset. And I learned that in business school. We talked about great people in the community doing great things, but not understanding the business aspect of it. And so we say business aspect. If you think of Big Brother and Big Sisters, you think of youth as your market. Well, that's not true. The market is the youth, their family, the community itself, public service needs, and businesses. And so I revamped the organization to serve all five.
That is deep. So why is mentoring youth so important to you? Why is it beneficial for us adults as professionals to mentor and invest in our youth?
Like I said, my company, we specialize in leadership development, workforce development. One of the biggest requests for training is a program I call Leading Across Generations. Because for the first time in history, you have five generations working in one space. And so to answer your question, the traditionalists and the baby boomers came into the workforce at a time to where it was very competitive and everybody fought to keep their jobs. And so the senior people was less likely to share information with the younger people. Let's fast forward 30, 40 years. For the first time in history, our Fortune 500 companies recognize we have a serious leadership gap. Less than 11% feel that they have a deep bench of leadership because we fail to mentor and pass down information. And so to help resolve that and serve our community, I took the organization and split it in half. We still do mentoring, but now we do Empower Future Leaders Program, which is leadership development, starting early.
Slow it down.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. That's that Yankee side coming. Girl. Yeah. But we teach leadership development. We teach it in the classroom, but also in the summer program.
What is the program called? The one
it's called Empower Future Leaders. It rests on four pillars, life skills, leadership development, career development, and cultural competency.
You made me realize how Toledo has kind of slowed me down. Because I used to talk faster than you, and now I'm seeing you talk faster than me.
And, you know, I always tell people, is it that we talk too fast or you listen too slow?
Oh, yeah. You got me there. Yeah. Is it hard for you to find mentors for the young people? If so, why is that?
Yes. People are busy nowadays. It seems like they're more busy more than ever. One of the biggest challenges is about 91% of our youth that we serve is of color. But 70% of our mentors are not of color. So one of the biggest challenges is finding people who look like them. Now, I do embrace the fact of having other cultures interconnect and bridge that cultural divide. But it's, some of our kids in our program do need to be able to see somebody who look like them that can relate to them on a deeper level. The biggest challenge is finding people of color that would volunteer. But overall, since I've been there, we've been always at least 200 plus kids on the waiting list.
And how many mentors do you think you've had in that time?
Since I've been there, we've had about several hundred. And so people don't understand how our program works. So we mentor, it's from the time they meet the child until the child turns 18. So it's not a 1 year off. Wow. Now, do we have some do 1 or 2 years and then they say to the child, parents say, we no longer need mentorship. That happens or they get relocated. Right now, we have the oldest one is at 14 years. We just celebrated one that was is 40, almost 50 years old, 49 years old. They stayed connected after the child turned 18. Now he's a young man and stuff. And they still, we just celebrated them this past December. They're about to hit their 50th mark.
I mean, I just can't even, I'm speechless. That's amazing. You have received numerous awards in your career. You have been honored with not one, but two proclamations from the state of Ohio for your work with Big Brothers Big Sisters of Northwestern Ohio. Most people don't even get one, and you have two. So congrats. And
thank you.
To your team, to the organization, at the work you guys have done and continue to do, how and when did both of these moments of recognition come about?
Actually, I got a call and said, hey, we got something for you. In both spaces, because I'm more focused on the work than recognition. I do appreciate it. I like the fact that it brings attention to what the great work the organization is doing. But it's to me, it's just part of my purpose, part of my journey.
So the first one was when? What year did you get it?
The first one was earlier this. Earlier in 2024, because we got recognized by Big Brother Big Sisters of America because we're an affiliate. As one of the, our growth in 2023, when most nonprofits were shrinking, we were still expanding. So we got recognized by the nationals, and then the state recognized us.
Amazing. How can we help you with your mission at Big Brothers Big Sisters in Northwestern Ohio?
Well, we're always looking for volunteers, whether it's through mentoring or just volunteering in the office or volunteering into the classrooms. That's another thing I'm proud of. We do the traditional mentoring. We do social-emotional learning. But over the past couple of years, through a partnership with UT student body, we created a Big Brother Big Sisters Rocket Nation. We have over 242 medical students that go into the classrooms with us. We're in 9 classrooms at no cost to the school system. We do a 7-week program because you come out and talk to the kids every summer.
I did.
Yes.
And I do. And I'm so proud. I wasn't going to make it about me, but I love those kids.
Yes. So for 7 weeks, they get free training at no cost to their parents. They get to meet politicians. They get to meet professionals, entrepreneurs, a little bit of everybody to help kind of guide them on their journey through life.
Well, I know that I had mentors. You had mentors, so we know the benefit of having great examples of leadership in our lives. So I guess we're going to keep doing that.
Yes.
And I'm hopefully everyone listening is inspired by this man's story, my story, whatever that may be when I tell it. And then I want to know if you would like to leave us with any closing thoughts.
So when I started my business, my marketing person said you have to have a quote. And so it took me about 2 months to come up with one because it had to be meaningful. And so a lot of us like to consider ourselves being leaders. And so the quote I came up with is, failing to empower others is essentially failing to lead. Because if you have knowledge and you're not sharing to empower others, you're not truly leading. Leaders build leaders. So imagine if all of us had the mindset of, let me take and share my knowledge with somebody else to help enhance them. Our capabilities
would be endless, huh?
Yes.
Well, thank you so much for joining me today in the studio when I know you could have been a million other places. You know, I got a funny story. It has taken me several months to get this man in here because he said, you got to call me 2-3 weeks in advance. Or so you ain't going to be on my calendar. So between government contracts and helping children, I mean, I'm very honored, like as I said in the beginning, to have you here.
So it's my honor to be here too. Thank you.
Thank you everyone for listening. I'm your host and producer, Monique. My executive producer is Chris Pfeiffer. Join me next time for another exciting episode of Soul of the Glass City podcast. For more information, if you have questions or comments, go to wgte.org/soul.
WGTE. Voices around us.
WGTE is supported in part by the American Rescue Plan Act funds, allocated by the City of Toledo and the Lucas County Commissioners, and administered by the Arts Commission.